It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking. Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to a B.E.A. beautiful Friday edition of the show. Happy Friday to all of those that celebrate. And the Green Bay Packers dominant in victory again last night, this time over another great NFC squad in the Washington Commanders. And things are looking up in Green Bay. They're talking about them on ESPN, ESPN Radio, everywhere this morning. They're the toast of the NFL for now and the first 2-0 team in the 2025 NFL season. Welcome in to Overtime. I'm your very elated and happy and jolly host, Burt Ramin, as always today. Packers looking great. DC with some concern. How concerned are Commanders fans waking up today with some deficiencies and a notable injury to Austin Eckler, veteran running back? We'll dive into all the topics today, get you a preview of the weekend, and so much more. Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered talking Arch Manning, Kalen DeBoer, job security, and NFL topics. Join us here in about 20 minutes. We whip around the sports world later on this hour and give you a few opportunities to win right away. The Friday Parlay will be posted. Burt's Bank will be posted, which is anything but bankable thus far. But I'm doing my best, people. 2-4, the season record for Burt's Bank. Looking to get back on the right track this weekend. And I'm so desperate to do so that I'm not putting in two bets in the hopper. I'm not putting in three bets in the hopper. I got four bets for you from college and pro football coming up this weekend. Very far from gambling advice here on the show, but Burt's Bank, I'm trying my hardest to make some prognostications. Haven't been overly successful so far. I'm batting 33%, but we'll see if I can improve on that this weekend. You can score free Jersey Mike's just for listening and suffering through Burt's Bank later on in hour one. And hour number two on a Friday always starts with the High Noon Showdown brought to you by the all-new Uncle Ed's Specialty Meats. Have you fired up the grill yet this football season? Why the heck not? Uncle Ed's can enhance your grilling experience every single time out there on the east side. And I can get you some Uncle Ed's bucks here if you can beat up your neighbor in a nice way with the High Noon Showdown coming up in hour number two. Latest from the NFL, more on the Packers' dominant victory and victories so far this year. V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. Victory, victory. That's the Packer cry so far. 2-0. For Green Bay, 2.3 is the number of the day. What the heck are you talking about, Burt? Was that your college GPA? No, I was a little bit better than that, at least a 3.0 for yours truly. But 2.3 yards per carry allowed by the Packer defense in two games, and they're not playing against the New Orleans Saints. They're not playing against the Dallas Cowboys and their aging, decrepit backfield. They're playing against David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs. That's the best backfield tandem in the NFL. And then the Washington Commanders, who have a very exciting rookie in Bill McCroskey-Merritt. They had Austin Eckler, who unfortunately looks like he went down with a pretty serious injury last night. But they also had a young quarterback named Jaden Daniels, who was unflappable, unstoppable, and undiagnosable last year for NFL teams. And Green Bay's defense has been electric in terms of getting after the quarterback, the pressure, the secondary's been good, the linebackers have been ball hawks. But let me ask you about the concern and the haterade that was drank after Micah Parsons was added to Green Bay and they lost Kenny Clark, which a lot of fans out there that are haters of Green Bay said, how are you going to stop the run without Kenny Clark? Good luck. Yeah, we don't even need your good luck. 2.3 yards per carry allowed for Green Bay, and the Packers are 2-0. Heck of a start for the Green Bay Packers. And reminder, Go Pack Go. Let's get into your scorecard. Major League Baseball, the White Sox better than Tampa last night, 5-1. Yankees beat the brakes off of Detroit, 9-3. Kansas City falls in Cleveland, 3-2. Guardians locking up the second spot for now in the Central at 75-71. And the Rockies are still looking for that season-worst equalizing win for last year's White Sox team. That putrid team last year at 41 wins. Rockies hanging on 40 wins right now. That's the case. Another shutout. San Diego wins last night in San Diego 2-0. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Rays at the Cubs 120, Royals at Phillies, White Sox at Guardians, Tigers at the Marlins, Cardinals at Brewers, Rockies at Padres, the area teams in action, Twins back at home, Target Field hosting the Diamondbacks tonight, 6:30 pregame, a 7:10 start time. NFL football, Thursday night football. It was all Packers from the jump. The Green Bay Packers survive an early injury to Jaden Reed. We got the diagnosis on that, a broken collarbone. But the good news, it's hard to kind of speculate and remember about broken collarbones and the timetable. When Rodgers broke his, he's a quarterback. He uses his arms a lot more than a receiver would. He missed the remainder of the season that particular year. Jaden Reed looked at first like he landed on the football, just really crushed onto his shoulder on a potential touchdown catch in the first quarter for Green Bay. He's going to miss some time, but not the entire season. At least that's what Matt LaFleur had to say. First, here's the injury update on Jaden Reed before we go any further.
He's going to miss a lot of time. So, unfortunately, you know, he broke his collarbone, so he'll be down for quite some time. We'll see how fast he can recover and heal. And certainly I would expect him back at some point this season. Obviously, it's a big blow to us. He's a guy that is a catalyst for our offense and our football team, quite frankly. You know, fortunately for us, I feel like we have a pretty deep wide receiver room, and it's going to be opportunities for other guys to step up and take advantage of.
And that's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. As for thoughts on last night's win, here's the coach.
All in all, I thought we were in control of the football game. For the majority of the game, we just got to, there was a lot of mistakes out there that we have got to clean up between penalties, some miscues, some misops. But you got to give credit to Washington. That's a really good football team. Overall, I was impressed with our defense, the energy they're playing with, getting a lot of pressure on a really good quarterback. It seemed like they were hitting them quite a bit.
And that's head coach Matt LaFleur. A little bit more from the coach here because I picked this out of the press conference on YouTube, him talking about Tucker Kraft, who had a career night last night. And Kraft said postgame, it was my first 100-yard receiving game at any level. A buck 24 for the former Jackrabbit. Here's Coach LaFleur on his performance and emergence in the offense.
He's a guy that approaches the game the right way. I can't say enough great things about Tuck and just the growth that we've seen from him from the time he's gotten here. But it's not only on the football field, it's every facet of life, I would say. And he's a real leader for us.
And that's Matt LaFleur talking about Tucker Kraft. Jordan Love, pretty darn good. 292 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. Packers win last night, 27-18 the final. Green Bay 2-0. Washington 1-1. Here's head coach Dan Quinn of the Commanders on last night's loss.
So obviously, when you're behind like that, we're just trying our ass off to get back into the game. There's some tough assignments to do. We chip, you help when you can. Like I said, just, I thought overall, just a tough night in terms of style and attitude of how we want to play, identity. So we just missed the mark on those, but I don't want to, I'll give the credit to Green Bay. You know, they played well.
And again, impressive quarterback for Washington, Jaden Daniels. What impressed me the most last night, he didn't have his best game, but he kept on coming back, kept his team in the game late, took hit after hit after hit. He got sacked 4 times last night. Here's Jaden Daniels on the ups and downs of last night's loss in Green Bay.
Like I said, they executed their scheme, whatever it was. They executed really well because they won the game. And we just didn't make plays. Starts with me, starts with everybody up front, starts with the whole offensive skill group. So it's not pointing the finger at anybody. Collectively, we're all to blame, and we'll get back to work.
So Packers are 2-0, and they'll march on into week number 3 in a matchup with the Cleveland Browns for their first road game of the season. The Washington Commanders, is there cause for concern moving forward? Just a bad night, or could this set up a bad, disappointing season for DC? Here's former NFL wide receiver Harry Douglas.
I'm going to go with a bad night. You got to give the Packers and their defense a lot of credit.
Right.
But I did not like how the wide receivers could not get open versus the secondary. And the front seven of the Green Bay Packers, they had a lot to say about that as well. But Why are you going to Noah Brown majority of the times on third downs and not Terry McLaurin? Mm-hmm. Why on a fourth and four play are you going to Jalen Lane, who is a rookie wide receiver? Why is Terry McLaurin not in the ballgame? So a few of those things I'm questioning, and it's not like Terry McLaurin, he was going to a lot in week one. What is the discourse there right now? Are they trying to see if other guys can step up and make plays? Well, I'm not trying to see that if I just gave a person an extended contract. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get Terry McLaurin the football as much as possible.
And again, they referenced it last night during the broadcast. Terry McLaurin being paid $30 million a year. Noah Brown being paid roughly $3 million a year. And they had Noah Brown out there in isolation and not Terry McLaurin. Pretty damning stuff last night for D.C. On the other side for Green Bay, Peter Schrager, great start. Is it sustainable in Titletown?
I don't know if a team could have had a better five-day stretch in an entire NFL season than what we have seen from the Green Bay Packers. What they have done now to the Lions and the Commanders, two teams who were one, the number one offense in the league a year ago, number one seed in the NFC, and then two, a team in the NFC Championship game, and absolutely silenced them. Both those teams averaged close to 30 points per game last year. Total, they've had 31 in their first two games, and two of the best running teams in the NFL were held under 100 yards total. The Packers defense is for real, and if you're an Eagles fan waking up this morning, this might be the guys that you have to worry about in the NFC.
You might be worrying about the Green Bay Packers. And in fact, right now, speaking of overreaction, and again, as a Packer fan, I'm a little bit wary today. I'm not a big gloater here. I don't feel amazing about Green Bay. The offense needs work. The defense is spectacular. It's been a great start for the Green Bay Packers. But the overreaction today is very evident, and they're praying on it even out in Vegas, where the Green Bay Packers suddenly are top two in Super Bowl odds, plus 600 and a tie for second with the Ravens, Bills first at plus 500, and the Packers have better odds to win the Super Bowl, which is wrong today. Hear me loud and clear out there, Viking fans and people that think I'm being a homer. Wrong for the Packers to have better Super Bowl odds than the Philadelphia Eagles, and they do, and it's not crazy close. Green Bay plus 600. Eagles have the fourth best odds behind the Bills, Packers, Ravens at plus 750. Let's move forward now. Sunday, Bears and the Lions collide. One of those teams will start out the season 0-2. That's a noon start time on Fox. Detroit is nearly a touchdown favorite in the game. Broncos at the Colts, 305. Eagles at the Chiefs, 325. Philly is a 1.5-point road favorite in that tilt. And then the home opener for the Minnesota Vikings, the return home for Adam Thielen officially, and more of J.J. McCarthy on tap. Falcons at Vikings, Sunday Night Football, 720 on NBC. Minnesota as of this morning at ESPN Bet is a 3.5-point favorite there. And we'll play two on Monday Night Football over the weekends. Bucks at Texans at 6 o'clock. Chargers at Raiders at 9. We'll be talking about those games, of course, on the Monday edition of Overtime. Rounding out the scorecard now, your NASCAR race this weekend is Saturday night at Bristol, 6:30 on USA TV. The WNBA regular season officially is over. Last night's finals for our area squad, Chicago loses at home to the Liberty, 91-86. Minnesota gets a regular season ending win over Golden State, 72-53. The Lynx are 34-10. And Vegas beats up on LA, 103-75. Asia Wilson, 23 points and 19 rebounds. Hottest team in the WNBA is in Las Vegas with a record of 30-14. And the playoffs begin on Sunday. First round matchups, best of three series, and a 1-1-1 format. Valkyries at the Lynx, noon on Sunday on ESPN. Fever at the Dream, 2 o'clock on ABC. Liberty at Mercury, 4 o'clock on ESPN. And the Storm visiting the Aces for game one, 9 o'clock Sunday night, also watchable on ESPN. Pretty good ball game last night in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. The Wake Forest Demon Deacons hosting the NC State Wolfpack ACC football. And it ended up being a 10-point win for the Pack on the road. Here's a late touchdown.
Bailey to throw. Touchdown, NC State. You lean on Smothers, and then your talented sophomore quarterback drops one right on Keenan Jackson.
Pretty good start to the season for the NC State Wolfpack out of Raleigh. They're 3-0, and including a member of the all-name team in their backfield. How about their running back, Hollywood Smothers, 24 carries, 164 yards in the win. That audio courtesy of ESPN Radio. Tonight, Colorado at Houston, 6:30. Kansas State at Arizona, 8 o'clock on Fox. And on Saturday, Nebraska home to Houston Christian, 11 o'clock. Northern Colorado, the home opening opponent for South Dakota, 1 o'clock kick from inside the dome on ESPN+. Plus, USF up north in Bemidji to battle the Beavers, 1 o'clock kick time there. Augustana up the road in Bismarck to take on the U. Mary Marauders, 2 o'clock start time. Listen to that game on 100.1 FM KXRB. Other matchups for our area squads. Iowa State at Arkansas State, 3 o'clock. Drake at South Dakota State, a 6 o'clock go time. Iowa home to UMass, 6:30. And Minnesota at California, 9:30 start time there. Nicole Auerbach talking about Notre Dame. They played one game and it was a loss to Miami. If they lose a second, are they out of the CFP conversation already?
If you look at the rest of their schedule, you know, you just don't have a ton of heavy hitters. I just wonder how a two-loss schedule with the losses being to the best teams on there, you know, you really need USC to be good. So you need like a couple of these games remaining to look better than maybe they do on paper at this point. It's just going to be tough. I think Notre Dame has a path every single year with one loss. And we saw that it wasn't even close, right? They got to host a game in the first round. But with two losses, you'd have to show that you've really grown from who you were at the beginning of the year, which makes sense. You know, they got a lot of new starters, new quarterback. But I think it would be really, really tough. I think in all of my, you know, conversations about Notre Dame going into the season, the idea, the baseline was at least splitting these first two games with Miami and A&M. Not to say they can't have a great season, be a factor, but I do think the playoff would be an uphill battle.
And Notre Dame, again, will take on Texas A&M this weekend. Just for reference, by the way, I'm not buying into the fact that Notre Dame's done if they're 0-2 with back-to-back losses to ranked opponents out of big conferences. Because last year, if you recall, they lost one regular season game and they lost it to the Huskies of Northern Illinois. And they got in one loss to an unranked team out of the MAC and now the Mountain West versus two losses to ranked opponents, SEC, ACC. I feel like these are very similar. Notre Dame not going to be done at an 0-2 start, but they got to take care of business the rest of the way to be in that conversation. Quickly here, let's dive into your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Volleyball update. South Dakota volleyball made it a clean sweep in its home opener over Green Bay last night inside the Sanford Coyote Sports Center, winning 3 sets to none, 25-19, 25-17, 25-16. Yotes are right back in the SCSC tomorrow night, as in tonight. Night for day two of the Coyote Invitational. They'll face off with Florida Gulf Coast University, a 7 o'clock start time. And the Augustana volleyball team moved to 4-2 on the season after splitting a pair of games last night and afternoon. Vikings beat Northwestern Oklahoma State 3 sets to 1 before falling to Fort Hays State 5-1, the new record for Fort Hays in 4 sets yesterday. Volleyball for Augustana 1-1 yesterday. They close out their week today, taking on New Mexico Highlands at 9 a.m. before closing the Tiger Classic with MSU Texas. That game coming up at 2 o'clock. And lastly, your ReliaBank headlines of the day conclude with hour number one with a Jackrabbit football preview. Second-ranked SDSU returns home on Saturday for a Beef Bowl matchup against the Drake Bulldogs. Kickoff for the sold-out game is 6 o'clock Central inside Dana J. Dykhouse Stadium. TV coverage will be available on Midco Sports and on ESPN+. Plus, pregame Beef Bowl barbecue. Get there early. Starts at 3:30, then goes till 5:30 in the tented tailgating area directly north of the Sanford Jackrabbit Athletic Complex. Plan in advance. Barbecue tickets are $12 each. Jackrabbits 2-0, a 30-24 double overtime win at Montana State just last week. Season opening win over Sac State. They should roll against Drake. That game coming up at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. And the GoJacks.com for the latest and greatest on Jackrabbit football. We'll take the break, get that out of the way. When we come back, yes, we're going to start out talking about the topic of du jour. In the NFL, that's the Green Bay Packers and their dominant win last night against the Washington Commanders. Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered gives us updates on Kalen DeBoer's job security, on Arch Manning's ceiling and what we've seen so far, and also a lot of NFL talk on the way with one of our favorites. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered and Texans Wire joins us next on this Friday, September 12th edition of Overtime, right here on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
We are off and running on this Friday edition of Overtime. Stay tuned later on this hour. Friday Parlay, Burt's Bank, and then hour number two, the High Noon Showdown. Several opportunities to win big on this Friday edition of the show. Speaking of winning big, that's what the Green Bay Packers did last night. Here to help break that game down, talk about the Micah Parsons effect on the Packer defense and that franchise up there in Titletown is our friend Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered and the Texans Wire. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. Cole, welcome back into the show. How's your week been treating you?
Bert, you know what it is. Week three of the college football season, overreactions galore. Week two of the NFL season, overreactions galore. Someone's going to be right, someone's going to be wrong, and ultimately, we're all going to have a bunch of opinions that won't be proven until the end of the month. How are we doing, bud?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. I'm a Packer fan, so I'm on cloud nine right now. But I'm more like, I'm going to be honest, I'm on cloud eight because the media would have me feeling on cloud nine. But I know better than that. I'm not going to go for the cheese, as we would throw that in for a Packer pun there. But I do feel good about the Green Bay Packers. The offense has been good. The defense has been stellar. What did you see last night, and what is your take about the Green Bay Packers and their new toy on defense in Micah Parsons?
Yeah, they feel like one of the more complete teams in the NFC, and I think that's a good sign in the right direction, especially when it comes to pass rush. The ability to get after a young offensive tackle in Josh Connerly was really a deciding factor between which quarterback was going to have a better day, and ultimately, Micah Parsons was credited with two of those sacks. He was credited on nine different pressures. He was credited for, I think, four quarterback hits, so he was doing his job of winning one-on-one battles against a still up-and-coming, maybe eventually promising right tackle, but somebody who was in well over his head for having a short week to prepare for a three-time All-Pro defensive end slash hybrid linebacker. And honestly, that's probably what's going to make Green Bay a threat to not only win the NFC North, but also win the NFC in general. The offense, there is that spark right now. Josh Jacobs, anytime touchdown. The numbers aren't as promising when it comes to yards after contact, but the ability to trust this passing attack, take that next jump forward, and the explosive plays downfield we're getting from Jordan Love, whether it be to Tucker Kraft or Dontavian Wicks or Luke Musgraves. Then you could throw in a Matthew Golden, the first-round pick out of Texas, Romeo Doubs. And though you do lose Jaden Reed, you still don't have Christian Watson. When those two players eventually find their way back onto the field, it's, again, not an elite wide receiver room, but it's a very solid wide receiver room that can get the job done, each have their own assigned roles, and be able to pile drive forward to where you trust that rushing attack. I think that Jordan Love at this point has looked the part of being a very solid, capable top 10 passer. He certainly, I think, has won over the locker room, and very many people believe that his overall fit in this offense has really kind of been, I think, enhanced even more so, where last season there were some hindrance at times, and it felt like that he was maybe part of the problem. But you also got to look at this defense. You're seeing guys who are very young and up-and-coming really take that next step forward. Edgerrin Cooper, once again, had a phenomenal game last night. You look at Javon Bullard at the interior defensive line spot. I mean, at the safety spot, had a really good game last night. Xavier McKinney, he did have a penalty, but he also had a pass breakup. He also had two open-field tackles. Lucas Van Ness had a pretty good game. They're very deep right now out in nothing Green Bay, which is a good thing for a team that wants to prove that it can win a Super Bowl, because if the deeper your roster is, the more complete your roster is. And yes, the injuries are right now an issue when it comes to the offensive line, but if you work past all of that, the move to part ways with Kenny Clark to eventually land a player like Micah Parsons might be the reason we are talking about a title coming to Green Bay for the first time in over a decade. They feel like the way that this offense has looked and the way that the defense continues to get better underneath Jeff Hafley in year two, it's going to be a unit that can create a lot of opportunities for itself and probably be the favorite in most betting lines moving forward.
Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered and Texans Wire, top tier coverage of the Houston Texans, is our guest here. You can find him on Twitter at Mr. Cole Thompson. Cole, what was your biggest, and you got to look yourself in the mirror here, you mentioned it off the jump, what was your personal biggest overreaction to week one? Is it the Packers? Is it the Lions on the inverse there? Is it somebody else? What did you take away from week one? Is it the Miami Dolphins? Give me your best overreaction from 1 week of action.
probably that Aaron Rodgers is back being an MVP candidate. You know, the way that he looked was phenomenal. And I get it. There's a lot of Packers fans that listen to the show. So you got to give credit where credit's due. He's 40 years old. He was entering a brand new offensive personnel. He was very late to sign on with the organization. And maybe it's just the fact that he played against his former team. Maybe it's the fact that he doesn't have a lot of film working with these receivers, so they're just finding ways to get on open. Maybe it's the fact that there is a lot of film that's positive for Aaron Glenn to go off of. But the version of Aaron Rodgers that we saw play against the New York Jets is vintage Aaron Rodgers that shows that time does come for us all, but it may not come this season for a player like Rodgers. He had over 350 passing yards, 4 touchdowns on the day. Massive critical drive in the fourth quarter to be able to get Pittsburgh back on top. Good stop by the defense, headlined by Jalen Ramsey, to force the incompletion against Garrett Wilson to win the football game. But there's also the part, and I know that this is going to sound very, very dark and depressing. I'm not trying to make the somber mood, but you know, when you think about people who are on their deathbed, there is that last day where you feel like that things are trending upward and you gain back your appetite and you start to feel like that you want to go for a walk and you have more energy. And family members are all called in and they see this person and they're like, wow, he's getting better. And the hospice nurse has to then grab your hand and say, no, this is the last stage of his life exiting the body before it's finally time to put him in the ground. That might also be Aaron Rodgers. We had one last game where Rodgers looked phenomenal. He was impressive with his decisive reads. His overall consistency, deep ball was there. And then this week and next week and every week from here on out after they play against the Seattle Seahawks, we start to see that Aaron Rodgers truly is a 40-year-old quarterback who is at the end of his rope, and Father Time has decided to come for his NFL career. I don't think that we're right there just yet when it comes to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a great defense every single season. That taxes Mike Tomlin hitting the over when it comes to win totals. But I do think that maybe I and a lot of other people overreacting to the performance that we saw at MetLife Stadium on Sunday. It was a good game, very solid game for a quarterback that I think still is trying to prove he has a lot left in the tank, but I don't think we will be seeing him bring home his 5th MVP by the time that we get to the month of December, or month of January.
And certainly a lot to choose from to overreact to, and a lot of people underreacting to certain things in week one. Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered and Texans Wire is our guest. You can find Texans Wire, texanswire.usatoday.com. I want to ask you about that team. People think highly of them. People think they're a shoe-in to win the division and also might mix it up, win another playoff game. That would be their 3rd consecutive season in doing so. But this opener against the Rams was a mixed bag, and the Jags looked good against a punching bag in the Carolina Panthers, and the Indianapolis Colts had Danny Dimes throwing dimes. Who's the biggest challenger, and what is the realistic challenge they provide to the Texans in that division this year, Cole?
I would say Jacksonville. I think if they have a good defense, not an elite defense, but a good enough defense with a solid pass-rushing combination of Josh Hines Allen and Trayvon Walker, they can get after the quarterback. They certainly have a good secondary that will create opportunities for takeaways and get the ball back to the offense. I think the big thing that comes on in with the addition of Liam Cohen is the quick tempo passing game and the ability to run the football efficiently. That was an area that was a major weak point last year for Jacksonville, ultimately led to the firing of Doug Peterson. And a lot of people kind of doubted Travis Etienne, the former first-round pick out of Clemson. The way that he has looked so far, and I talked to a buddy of mine who actually is out in Jacksonville, and she told me that there is a new confidence that is brought in by Etienne. The way that he played against Carolina is a sign that they're going to be able to be efficient on early downs to create opportunities to pass on 2nd and 3rd, which is a good thing if you're Trevor Lawrence, because it's all about tempo, it's all about timing, and it's all about consistency. That is what Liam Cohen preaches. That is what Liam Cohen wants for his offense. And he has a running back that he believes can be that consistent factor that elevates the status of what is a guy like Trevor Lawrence when it comes to setting up plays on early downs to execute, which is, again, a thing that you want to have if you are a program that wants to take that next jump forward. The other thing is that they have an easy schedule. I mean, they don't have a 4th-place schedule because that belongs to the Tennessee Titans, but they have a 3rd-place schedule. The division as a whole plays against the NFC West, and they also play against the AFC West. So they might be some trap-up games there, but if they can go split the series with the Texans, maybe win 2 against Tennessee and certainly split the series against Indianapolis, 9-8 might be good enough to win this division this year. Houston did not look great offensively. I don't know how much more we're going to see in terms of progression with the offensive personnel. Christian Kirk is still out. You don't know what you have with Braxton Berrios. You don't know what you have with these young receivers. The offensive line was dreadful. Now, credit, they did have to switch around a bunch of players right before the start of the game because of an injury. But when you have to flip around a bunch of players and you can't trust your backup right tackle, that kind of says that you don't have a great offensive line, and that's not a good sign for C.J. Stroud moving forward. I think Indianapolis is fool's gold. I get it. Danny Dimes had a good day, but let's give him 4 or 5 games, and then we'll get a really good gauge on who he is as a player. And Tennessee's still Tennessee. They still have a ton of issues on the offensive line, ton of issues defensively. Bo Nix had one of the worst passer ratings in the NFL last week, and he still was able to lead 2 drives that eventually got Denver the win in their backyard. So I think Jacksonville is the favorite, and they should be outside of Houston to win this division.
Cole Thompson, our guest of SEC Unfiltered and Texans Wire. We'll get to Kalen DeBoer and Alabama, Arch Manning and Texas in a moment. One more NFL question. I would be remiss because I certainly do know my audience. There's a lot more fans of the Minnesota Vikings than fans of any other team listening right now. So give me your take on the performance and the substance and the circumstantial evidence we saw from J.J. McCarthy in that Monday Night Football tilt. That was an impressive fourth quarter. Rest of the game, not so much for J.J. Fire up the Minnesota Viking fans one way or the other, Cole, with your take on JJ's opener.
It was an opener. You know, we could talk about the fourth quarter, and yes, he had a great throw to Aaron Jones. He had a good decision-making to tuck and run for that touchdown late. Those are all things that you want to see from a quarterback that fits in the Kevin O'Connell system and that he feels well advanced. But also keep in mind, there was 6 3-and-out drives. There was the big interception return for a touchdown by a former practice squad player that was on your team last season. Some of the decision making was not that great. He's a young quarterback that I think is going to find his footing. I'm not worried about anything along those lines. What I will say is, and this is probably the most important part, you don't need J.J. McCarthy to be this world-class difference maker to get to a conference title. Minnesota has done a good job of building up this defensive line to be one of the best in the NFL. Whether it be with the addition of Blake Cashman last offseason, I know he went on the IR, but still, Jonathan Grenard, Andrew Van Ginkle, they tried to do whatever they could to fix the secondary. I think it will be better than what it was last season, though if you look at the first quarter, certainly a couple of big-time plays that they want back. They have an offensive personnel that I think is going to be really bountiful. I know that T.J. Hockenson didn't get that involved in the passing game. I don't really worry about him. He's a top-10 tight end in the NFL every single season for a reason. They feel like they got 2 or 3 guys at the wide receiver spot that can take the place of Jordan Addison while he's suspended. When Addison gets back fully healthy, he also is going to be involved in a very big-time role, and I think that's beneficial for what this offense can be. You have Justin Jefferson. You have a good running back duo now with Jordan Mason, who's kind of, I think, taking over that lead role, but you're not taking Aaron Jones completely out of the conversation just yet. So another beneficiary for you, just be a point guard if you're J.J. McCarthy. Like, that's what you need to be. Just don't make a lot of mistakes. Put the ball in the right receiver's hands. Go continue to move the ball in a progressively momentous forward. And avoid 3-and-outs. Mm-hmm. If you do that, Minnesota has a defense that can bail them out of trouble. They have a ground game that I think is going to be very bountiful inside the red zone. There's a reason why I have them going 11-6 and making the playoffs. I trust Kevin O'Connell. He's a top-5 coach in the NFL. He has built a roster and a very, very good coaching staff that he gets the best version out of his players. And I think that there's a lot to like about the identity about what this team could be. It just needs to all come together. But you don't need what a team, say, like Arizona needs this year to make the playoffs. You don't need what I would say a team like even Houston right now might need. You are good enough because of what the supporting cast around you looks like for J.J. McCarthy to be pedestrian and still get to 11-plus points.
Certainly a good take there. Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered and Texans Wire. A couple SEC questions here as we cut you loose. Kalen DeBoer, job security in question after week 1, a win against UL Monroe last week. They'll beat up on the Badgers, I'm sure, this weekend. Talk to us about Kalen DeBoer's job security. If you think that's a ludicrous discussion topic these days, does it have some legs there in Tuscaloosa? Nothing would surprise me. And then also your take on Arch Manning through 2 games, Cole.
Yeah, I had a tuna fish sandwich yesterday for lunch, and I also decided to go for a jog. And I bring those things up because those are about as relevant as Kalen DeBoer's firing this upcoming year. It's not happening. It like, I get Alabama fans are frustrated because there is a standard. There is a certain mentality that you have to carry yourself with. I'm an Alabama grad. I know some of these people. I've had some of these conversations behind closed doors. Kalen DeBoer has not won over a lot of people because of the way he does things different. But you have to look at the recent buyout trends currently in college football. Last season, only three Power Four head coaches were fired. It was Mack Brown, it was Ryan Walters at Purdue, and it was Neil Brown at West Virginia. Neil Brown and Ryan Walters' buyouts were under $8 million. Mack Brown's buyout was under $2.2 million. Kalen DeBoer's buyout is right now at $68 million. And that's just his personal buyout. That does not include the entire coaching staff that they would have to let go of, who have multiple years under control that would potentially also now be because of NIL, the GM department, the recruiting staff out there. They also would be fired, and then you have to raise the money to bring in a new head coach that would also want to bring in his staff, his GM, his recruiting metrics, his strength and conditioning coach. So there's so many different addendums of how much money you would be spending just to hit reset, where the other guy that comes on in is also not going to be Nick Saban. And honestly, what really drives me crazy with a lot of Alabama fans is you don't want to admit that Nick Saban in his final year was starting to show regression. He had multiple games where he was the more penalized team. He had multiple games where they led the game in turnovers. He had multiple appearances where Alabama did beat the spread going into the fourth quarter. So he had lost his edge. This was coming. It was inevitable. And he decided after losing in overtime to Michigan, now is the perfect time for me to call it a career because if it's only going to get more challenging and I don't want to do this to my body. So Alabama fans can continue to hope and pray that they will get their next Nick Saban to come on in. It'll be just the same thing over and over again, but it's not going to happen. So I think that Kalen DeBoer is a solid coach. He's going to have to prove he can win against teams like Georgia and Tennessee. He's going to have to prove he can win against teams that are inferior like Alabama and Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt and Oklahoma or teams along those premises. But I don't worry about him this year. 2 years from now, we can have this conversation about if he's going to get fired. As for Arch Manning, bottom line is that if you didn't overhype him and you didn't buy into the notion that this is a kid who may be in his third year with the system, but his first full year starting, let's give him time to grow and mature and adapt. Because he probably would have figured it out, and nobody would care if his last name didn't belong to the most royal family of college football and just really football in general, then things would be fine. And I do think that things are going to be fine. There are still some growing pains. There are still some moments to where you're starting to see regression set on in. Fundamentals are really an issue that I have a problem with when watching his throwing motion, when watching his footwork. It's sloppy and all over the place, but that's what you expect from a young quarterback making his second career start in a season and fourth career start overall. So let's temper our expectations on what we have to see from Arch Manning before we anoint him as the second coming of this next college football god or label him a bust for not living up to the expectations that nobody besides the media and really just Paul Feinbaum, if we're just being completely honest, set for somebody.
It's certainly great stuff as always. Cole Thompson, you're the best, my friend. Find him online at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, The Work at SEC Unfiltered, and TexansWire.USAToday.com. Have a great weekend, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Bert. Take care. Have a good weekend.
You too. Great stuff as always. A deep dive as always and all sorts of content there. Cole Thompson of SEC Unfiltered and Texans Wire. Always a great guest. How about that for a conversation? Started out going in a direction on the Minnesota Vikings that I was about to say, oh, I hope he doesn't tick off the fans of the purple and gold, but ended up singing the praises. JJ's got to be a point guard, got to be a guy this year, and he certainly lived up to the task in the fourth quarter. The trajectory is up for Minnesota. Maybe not as high right now as people are on the Green Bay Packers, but Minnesota, without a doubt, in my eyes, a big-time challenger for an NFC crown, NFC North crown as well. We'll see how it all unfolds in the days, weeks, and months to come in the NFL season when we come back, whip around the sports world, Friday Parlay Live, Burt's Bank, and an opportunity for you to score two regular subs at Jersey Mike's, a sub above three Sioux Falls locations. I got two subs waiting for you if you're my lucky caller around the corner here on this Friday edition of Overtime on ESPN Sioux Falls.
streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Friday, September 12th edition of Overtime. There's a lot to get to right now on the show. Whip around the sports world. Friday Parlay Live, Burt's Bank, and you can win some Jersey Mike's on me here in just a moment. But whip around coverage from the sports world first. We start out in a really somber tone here. First things first, Jason Collins, the NBA's first openly gay player who now serves as an ambassador for the league, is undergoing treatment for a brain tumor, his family announced just yesterday. Collins retired back in 2014 after a 13-year career that included stops with Minnesota, Atlanta, Boston, Washington, New Jersey, and Memphis. And back to the Nets after they moved to Brooklyn. He initially announced he was gay in 2013, becoming the first publicly gay athlete to play in any of the four main American North American sports leagues. That article available at ESPN.com. All the best in a fight with a brain tumor for Jason Collins, former NBA player. Now, really somber news to pass along, and I had a very fortunate part of my young career in sports broadcasting spent with the Syracuse Sports Network from Learfield, and that's why I'm familiar with the name that you might not know. I'm about to mention to you right now, Tiana Manakahia, former Syracuse star who played women's basketball professionally in Russia, France, and her home country of Australia, officially passed away after a long battle with cancer at the age of just 30. Syracuse and her family writing on a social media account, "We are heartbroken to share the passing of our beautiful Tiana Manakahia. She left us on Thursday surrounded by family, friends, and lots of love. She was a shining light who touched the lives of everyone she met with her kindness, strength, and warmth. She fought right till the very end, showing courage and grace beyond words. She was a phenomenal basketball player at Cuse, was an electrifying playmaker there. Cancer diagnosis, made the comeback, and has fought and fought and fought. And eventually today, we can say rest in peace to Tiana Manakahia, her family, her friends, all of our thoughts and prayers to Syracuse women's basketball and that community as they mourn the loss of a great player, great person, and a tremendous inspiration in Tiana Manakahia. Now, other news to get to from around the sports world. Free agent guard Malcolm Brogdon has agreed to a one-year deal to sign on with the New York Knicks. That as of this morning, entering year number 10 in the NBA. Brogdon, former Sixth Man of the Year, gives the Knicks key backcourt depth and reserve playmaking. Expected to have a rotational role for the new for his new team and coach Mike Brown, and joins Landry Shamet as signings on one-year deals to help round out the Knicks roster. Other news to get to, Nafisa Collier stated her MVP case last night, becoming just the second player in the history of the WNBA to finish a regular season with a 50-40-90 shooting split after the Minnesota Lynx's most recent win and final regular season win over Golden State in Minneapolis. Collier finished the regular season shooting 53% from the floor, 40% from three, and 91% from the foul line, joining Elena Delladon in 2019 as the only WNBA players to have such a season. MVP caliber, sure. Are there other players that are in the conversation? Absolutely. But Nafisa Collier, in terms of generally the healthiest player this season and the best player this season on the best team, I think she's got quite an argument. What say you for WNBA MVP? And lastly, maybe bad news here, but initial layer of the onion, another layer of the onion coming out on the Kawhi Leonard case in regards to the Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast and their reporting on Aspiration that started just last week. A limited partner with the Clippers reportedly sent nearly $2 million to the now bankrupt company that allegedly gave Kawhi Leonard an endorsement deal for a, quote, no-show job less than 10 days before the star forward was then paid $1.75 million by the company. Certainly doesn't look good, but again, this is an open and active investigation, so no speculation there. The company Aspiration reportedly agreed to a $28 million endorsement deal with Leonard back in 2021. Clippers owner owner Steve Ballmer invested $50 million through his personal LLC in September of that year, and the Clippers announced a $300 million partnership with the company 2 weeks later. Torre reported that Leonard agreed to a 4-year, $28 million endorsement deal in April of 2022, 9 months after he re-signed with the team. And that's just the latest layer there that a limited partner from the Clippers put $2 million in, and the machine spit out $1.75 million just 10 days later to Kawhi Leonard. Again, that's the latest update there on a very troubling situation from the NBA and pro sports in general as far as a potential skirting of the salary cap. That's the accusation there for the LA Clippers, Steve Ballmer, and the Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast. Lastly here, history made for the New York Yankees and captain Aaron Judge wasted no time moving past another all-time great on the team's career home run list last night, just 2 days after passing Hall of Fame catcher Yogi Berra for fifth place on the franchise's list. Judge hit two long balls in his first two at-bats in a 9-3 win over the Tigers to tie Joe DiMaggio for fourth with 361 career home runs. Hall of Famer Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, and Lou Gehrig still ahead of Judge on the all-time Yankees career homers list, but more history and a tie of Joe DiMaggio last night for Aaron Judge. Friday Parlay has been posted live. We do see several entries already coming in, and you can get yours in right now on Twitter. Twitter exclusive contest at ESPN Sioux Falls. Here are your picks for this weekend's edition of the Friday Parlay. By the way, I'm throwing in Twins Yankees tickets for next week's midweek series in Minneapolis. Georgia and Tennessee, good SEC rivalry. The Volunteers are home in Knoxville, and they're getting 3.5 points against the Bulldogs from Georgia. That's your first pick there. Philly, Kansas City, the Chiefs are a 1.5 point home dog. The defending champion Philadelphia Eagles, 1.5 to spread there. And then Sunday Night Football, Falcons in town to battle the Vikings. Atlanta plus 3.5. Take your pick there. And your tiebreaker total points between the Broncos and the Colts coming up. That's a Sunday afternoon game. And with that, let's dive into week 3 of Burt's Bank. It hasn't been too bankable thus far. And why would you expect anything different this week?
There may not be much in there.
Where's all the money?
That's as good as money, sir. Those are IOUs. Go ahead and add it up. Every cent's accounted for.
In fact, there's probably less than last week.
They've done studies, you know. 60% of the time, it works every time.
That doesn't make sense.
But it's Friday, and maybe against our better judgment, it is time to open Burt's Bank.
Open Burt's Bank, and what will you find? Not a lot these days. 2-4 the record on the season. That's why I'm bringing out the big bat this weekend. Ready to go. 2-4 the record. I got 4 bets for you. One big value in life to me is knowing when you're good, knowing when you're bad, and knowing when you are ugly. And the Wisconsin Badgers, my team, my beautiful Badgers, are horrifically bad this year at football. They're a 20.5 point underdog in Tuscaloosa against a hungry, hangry, ticked off Alabama Crimson Tide football team. It's not 21, it's 20.5. Give me Bama. Circle me Burt there. Bama over my Badgers. It makes me sad. Let's move on. Over to the NFL now. The Detroit Lions are desperate. People are dragging their name through the mud. They can't coach. They can't win. They can't do anything. This team stinks. No, they don't. They're going to roll the Bears on Sunday and prove everybody wrong. Lions -6.5. And again, right under that key number, it ain't 7. Give me Detroit to win. 7 points, 10 points, 8 points, doesn't matter. They win, cover the spread. That's Burt's Bank pick number 2 of the weekend. The Denver Broncos, another team that was maligned after a win in week 1 against Cam Ward and the Titans. The Colts could be better offensively than Tennessee, certainly. I don't think that's the case coming up on Sunday. Denver at Indy, a 1.5 point spread. Give me the road team and the better defense and the overall better squad for the Denver Broncos, -1.5. And lastly, I don't feel good about this. I really don't. The Eagles are a better team than Kansas City. The Eagles should win on Sunday at Arrowhead, and they should win big. Kansas City's gonna win the game. because they cannot afford to start 0-2. Pat Mahomes needs to get back on track. Travis Kelce needs to do the same. They need to get through this adversity with the receiving core early on. Chiefs are going to find a way to win because that's what they've done over the last decade since Mahomes came on scene. They get wins like this, these gritty wins where people say, how the heck did they pull that off? Why the heck are they still in this game? They're an eventuality. They're not going away this year. Kansas City plus 1.5. Thanks for the points. And they win at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. That is Burt's Bank. And let's take our lucky caller. Quickest on the draw for free Jersey Mike's right now. 605-362-3776. Caller number one. Let's do this. 605-362-3776. The number to dial. I'll get to caller one over the break. And we'll also go ahead and grab our calls for the High Noon Showdown. Caller number one, let's do this right now. Caller one, you win Jersey Mike's on me. Welcome to the show. What's your name?
John.
John, I got you, man. I'll get you penciled in here. I'm going to put you on hold, John, as our winner of Jersey Mike's here. So away he goes. And there's our winner for Jersey Mike's and Burt's Bank. Two free regular subs, three Sioux Falls locations. And there is two subs, John. So if you feel like it, number nine, on wheat, Mike's Way with banana peppers. Thank you very, very much. That's my order at Jersey Mike's. We take the break, come back as we meet our winners and contestants for the High Noon Showdown. We got our winner already for Jersey Mike's. Congratulations to John. I'll get those certificates at the front desk for you. If you want to beat up your neighbor, boop them on the nose, bop them on the nose, and then win a big prize pack. Let's do it. 605-362-3776. The High Noon Showdown. I'm going to throw in a pair of Jason Aldean tickets. How about that? We're stirring the pot for you, people. It's a big one today. The High Noon Showdown. Caller two, caller three. Let's put up your dukes and go to war. 605-362-3776. The High Noon Showdown is next on Overtime.